Several times you suggested that American democracy has been hijacked or circumscribed over the years, but when was there a time when it was really more robust than now? Hasn't it always been an oligarchy, or has it gotten worse in that regard?
Well, it's much worse because there are fewer safeguards for the average citizen. We always had the Bill of Rights, and if you could afford a lawyer, right there, put you in a small category, you could fight the government. You could maintain a certain amount of freedom. That's the thing that has visibly been most lost in the last few years. A perfect state we never achieved because, after all, we were founded with slavery as in the Constitution, as part of it's a national institution. And though some of the founders disliked slavery, there it is. And it took a great civil war to get rid of it, and the Civil War wasn't even about slavery. It was about preserving the Union. I would say that the years that produced the Depression, up to then, I think we had a pretty good country. We certainly had a good public educational system. Geography was my favorite as a grade school subject. And we had a good educational system. And those of us who went into the Army in the Second World War were far better educated at 17, 18, 19 than our equivalents today.
You ran for Congress many decades ago. Would you recommend that strategy to anyone else?
No, not today. You have to be a born mendicant, that is, beggar, to go in for a federal office. It costs too much. I went in a Democratic primary for Senate in California about 15 years ago just to see what was going on. And rather nice guy, a senator from California, said to me, you know, what do you want to do this for? And he was one of the good guys. And I said, well, I want to see what's going on, and by entering the race, I can at least change the dialogue. I can bring up issues, and the papers have to cover you, and that other people won't talk about. So from that point of view, I enjoyed that. But get this, he said to me, you realize, he said, this is his own experience, and he was not a rich man, nor was he owned by rich men. He said, when I was elected, you have a 6-year term. If you want to be reelected 6 years later, you must raise $10,000 a week for all 6 years of your first term. Well, how do you do that without selling your ass? So, I don't advise it for anybody unless you are in the prostitute business or unless you like begging. There's some people who really like going around asking for money. Not I.
It's a strange fetish, I think.
Yes.
You were born into the elite and raised accordingly. How did you end up as a critic of oligarchy and empire? You could have written novels and not gotten into as much trouble as you have for taking political stands. How'd you end up this way?
Well, I think I have an overdeveloped sense of justice, probably, something which is largely lacking in our fellow citizens, who are brought up with a totally different ethos from many of us, my generation. It's just, you know, how to get ahead is what most people think about. They think about themselves, their careers, and why not. But at the same time, there should be issues that affect everybody. You see, I have a sense of the country. And I have a great affection for the country, and particularly the country as devised by the founders and modified, sometimes in a good way, sometimes not, by their successors. I take it personally. It's a family affair. My family was in on the founding of the United States. So I take it personally. And I know quite a few people of my generation who did take it personally. I don't meet anybody now. And you imagine Bush Jr. staying out. Obviously, he was thinking about a political career because his father was doing well and what. But he would have felt safe staying out of a national war. Or Cheney, who became a congressman before he rose to invisibility, staying out. Even Clinton, whom I kind of liked. And the only noble deed that Clinton ever did was the famous letter to the draft board saying why he did not.
Mixed bag, though. He's also worried about his political future.
Yeah, you know, he's worried about that, but it was a hell of a good letter.
Yeah.
and very noble.
How does he get excoriated for that, then Bush and Cheney get a free pass?
Well, because everybody knows that they've been bought. Everybody knows they're hired. And you see, no one takes them seriously. Clinton, people took seriously because he was a wonderful speaker. He's a great explainer. He understood the economy. Everybody knew that. The other presidents just went blank on the subject of economics. Clinton could lecture your ear off. So if you don't respect the man who's president, you don't expect much from him.
Years ago, I heard the white supremacist Tom Metzger on his Aryan Update phone hotline offering a video of one of your lectures for sale. And the sympathetic things that you said about Tim McVeigh have also given people pause. Now, there's a longstanding right.
I want to know more about Tom Metzger.
He just offered this video in his hotline for sale of one of your lectures.
Is he alive?
Yeah, he is. He runs White Aryan Resistance in Southern California.
Oh, that Metzger, yeah. He was around 20 years ago in the elections, yeah.
But there is this long-standing kind of right-leaning nativist critique of empire and centralizing power. I mean, what affinities or lack of affinities do you feel with that?
Well, look at Pat Buchanan, who borrowed a great deal from me for a republic, not an empire. Well, that is what I've been saying for a half a century, that we're not in the empire business, or we should not be in the empire business, because we're not very good at it, and we have so much wrong in our own country. So there is a moment, I would suspect, that the far right has to have something positive to talk about instead of worrying about getting rid of the inferior breeds, what they think of as inferior breeds. So being anti-imperial is an interesting thing for them to take up, because I would think they'd be on the other side. But as many people want to join that, why not?
How do we extricate ourselves from this drive towards, you know, repressive imperial state? Is there any way the American population can rise and throw off the chains, or are you kind of pessimistic that it's going to be irresistible?
Well, we have very little machine. Since we don't have representative government, I don't really see how we could do it. I see it ending, and I see it ending fairly soon. And you're an economist of sorts, I gather. We're going to go broke. This deficit spending that we're doing now, just the last few days, it's horrendous. We are in they've already spent Social Security, I mean, as if it had ever been safe, because they used to replace the real money that we sent in the form of tax. They replaced them with IOUs called treasury bonds. IOUs the money, and one day I'll pay it back, as if we'll ever get that back. Now they're going to use it all up. The famous surplus that Clinton went on about was the Social Security surplus. They were counting that as federal revenue. Well, it wasn't federal revenue. It's a separate trust fund, not to be touched. I think all the money in it's gone or has been, you know, put off to one side as collateral to pay for perpetual war.
Well, there's a lot of ruin in the country, as Adam Smith said. You once anointed Christopher Hitchens as your successor, as his support of the war and even the kind things he's had to say about George W. Bush made you think of rewriting your intellectual will?
Well, growing pains. This will pass. It's like acne.
Okay, I think that'll bring it to a close. Thanks for joining us, Gore Vidal.
Thank you.
Thank you.